Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Rabbi.
Thank you for joining us for lesson two of Warrior to Warrior. Today's lesson is a very, very fundamental lesson about not worrying, because it speaks about the two illnesses that Jews have. It's inherited, whether you ask illnesses. Whether you're Ashkenazi or Sephardi, both have the same illness. It's not just Ashkenazim and not just Sephardim. And that is called guilt. However, we're not going to discuss guilt, but we're going to discuss shame. Now, if I would ask you, what is the difference between shame? I feel ashamed, embarrassed, or guilty? How would you describe, and is it related? You know, are you ashamed because you're guilty, or are you guilty because you're ashamed? Or you could be guilty without being ashamed, or you could be ashamed without being guilty. True. Now, what happens is when you're ashamed or guilty, you get frustrated. When you become frustrated, you again lose your excitement. And you lose the excitement, then you have no energy to overcome your animal instincts, and you're back into the worrying business. And we can't hire too many Jews to worry about us, because they need to worry about themselves. So who are you going to hire to worry if everyone is worrying? But I think, honestly, I think if we would really know who we really are, but not who we really are, but what's our maximal potential of being, we would never feel ashamed or frustrated. The reason we're frustrated is because we have much higher expectations of ourselves than really we can be, and we're ashamed that, I made a mistake. I really did make a mistake. I wrote a text message to someone that I shouldn't have written. Okay. So what do you think? You're an angel? You think you're perfect? I'm looking for that perfect person that ever existed. No one. How much more so us? And we'll go into that in more detail, what it really means. It's not just a nice fairy tale. So what I'd like to start with is text 1, if you have the book, on page 46. You have it, text 1, page 46. It speaks about the difference between guilt and shame. It's two different concepts. Let's go to Dr. Brisman, will read.
The emotion of guilt is a negative feeling that people can experience for a wrongdoing, such as being untruthful or deceptive to others. Guilt is often confused with shame. People may refer to these emotions incorrectly or interchangeably. However, much evidence suggests that they are distinct. Similar to guilt, shame is an unpleasant feeling, but shame tends to be a more painful experience and is characterized by feeling worthless, exposed, and small. These are not reliable distinctions between the types of situations that can separately evoke guilt or shame, and it is possible to feel a certain level of both emotions after a misdeed or failure. Guilt and shame can be distinguished by the negative evaluations that individuals make after lying or following some other harmful action. Negatively judging the self by focusing on what I did wrong can elicit shame, whereas negatively judging the wrongful behavior by focusing on what I did wrong can evoke guilt. Thus, it is perhaps easier to understand why guilt may feel less painful than shame, because guilt stems from a greater focus on a temporary act as terrible rather than a global evaluation of the self as a terrible person.
So basically, guilt is about the act. Shame is about yourself. Let's bring it in a practical sense. If you go to page 47, You're on page 47, figure 2. It's also, you'll see it on the PowerPoint, but it's hard maybe to read. But basically is, let's read this scenario. I can't believe I did this again. What a weak idiot I am. I don't like to use the word idiot, but on myself I could say I'm an idiot. Or your guilt is, I did it again. That is so harmful to my well-being. So it's not about I. It's about the objective, the subject. I'm such a bad parent. I can't control my kids. So it's about me. That's ashamed. Guilt is, I'm having difficulty controlling my kids. I need to do a better job. You get the difference? So the shame is you. You feel ashamed. You feel almost like you're worthless. Guilt is, I did something wrong. But it's not, I don't feel worthless because of it. You can feel guilty, but you still feel you're special. I promise not to get angry anymore, but I did. I must be crazy. That is shamed. I promise not to be angry anymore, but I did. I feel terrible about the damage that my outbursts are causing. That is guilt. You got the difference or not? So guilt is about the subject. Shame is about myself. You get the picture? Now, it doesn't mean bad. It could be, you know, I feel ashamed that I got a 90 on my test. Is that a bad thing? That's not a bad thing, you got a 90. But, you know, I was expecting to get 100. Should I feel guilty that I got a 90?
No.
Guilty doesn't fit when I get a 90. I feel maybe ashamed because I was hoping to get 100 and win, you know, a free trip to Hawaii. But the point...
If you didn't learn enough, so then the guilt will kick in.
Maybe kick in after. Okay, that's true. But that's the guilt that's like an outcome of the shame, you know. But it's not... You know, you could have a guilt that's not shame. You could have shame that's not guilt. You know, it's like it could work both ways. Now, the question is, how do I get out of this shameful feeling? Because when I do feel ashamed, I become frustrated. When I become frustrated, then I lose my excitement of emotional existence, and then I'm depressed, so to say, and I can't do what's right. We're back to square one. There's a famous story of a guy called up a librarian. I don't know if it was in Tenafly or something. He called him like 2 a.m. in the morning. And he asked him, when is the library? What time does the library open? So the librarian says, well, honestly, to tell you, the library opens at 9 a.m. So the guy on the phone says, 9 a.m.? So late? I mean, what's going on here? And so the librarian says, yes. And why are you calling me at 2 a.m. about the library opening at 9? Yeah, you want to get in earlier? I mean, what's the problem? He says, I'm not trying to get in. I'm trying to get out. I've been stuck here all night. You understand the point? You know, we're not focusing here tonight about getting in. We have to get out of the shame. How do I get out of it? How do I get not to feel guilty and shameful? Guilt we're not going to discuss in this lesson, but I need to maintain a positive emotion and avoid negative emotion. So, what do I do? My dear friends, I hate to break it to you, but God created the world with only two types of people. They used to say there is either Chabad or not Chabad. But the truth is, this is very serious, this is in Tanya. There's one that's called a Tzaddik, and one that's called a Beinoni. What's the difference? Both have a godly soul, like we spoke about last week, and an animal, which we called it a natural. The difference is that Tzaddik was given the ability to control the natural soul totally to the point that he could turn it over to become righteous like the godly soul. So he could make the animal soul, so to say, become selfless, all about God. But that's maybe point 1% of the population. 99, we're in the 99% that we have an animal, a natural soul, and a godly soul, and we have the constant struggle. So you're never going to wake up one day and say, when is that day that I'm never going to get angry again? That's never going to happen, my friends. I'm telling you. Unless you're a tzaddik, but most of us, I'm thinking about me in this room, we don't have that ability. And therefore, if you know how high you could reach, you're not frustrated that is there going to be a day that I'm not going to get angry. My dear friends, every day you could get angry.
Don't look at me.
I'm telling you the truth. You shouldn't be ashamed of it. This is who you are.
Human being.
A human being. We saved you the front table here. Right here. The front table is for you. A human being. We call it human, natural being that's not yet a tzaddik. That is who we are. We are naturally gonna be animals. We have the ability to control it with our godly soul. We have the ability to get angry less. We have the ability to control the anger. Yeah.
We make that choice.
Yeah, but to say that I'm not gonna have any more of that feeling of anger or jealousy or envy or whatever it is, you're gonna have it.
Because that's the way God created.
Exactly. He has, and you'll soon see why.
We do what he wants.
I remember there was once a shatchin is the one that makes a matchmaker, and they're trying to match, you know, one person to another person. So he says to yeshiva boy, you know, he used to learn a whole day. He says, you know, I have a girl for you. He says, I'm not interested in girls. Yeah. He says, but I want to tell you, she's very smart. She's very, she's very rich. Rich? Okay, what else does she have? Well, she's, she has a great job, and she comes from a great yichus. Yichus is like, you know, your grandparents were the greatest rabbis in the world, you know. Yeah, you know, every grandparent was the great rabbi. Who was the regular person? But everyone is a grand. And after this shatchan is telling him 100 things about this great girl, so he says to shatchan, I want to ask you a question. Be honest with me. If she's such a good girl, why would she marry me? Shatchan says, well, I'll tell you the truth. And, you know, this is where the point of the whole thing is, well, I can't get you everything, you know. She's a bit so much sugar, you know. So the point here is, that we are all meshuga. You know what I'm trying to say? We're not angels. And God did not create us like that. It's not a fault here. We are not flawless. We're full of flaws. Do you know anyone perfect besides yourself? Anyone else that's perfect? In their intellect, in their character, in their emotion, in their behavior, in their social, in their anxiety. You know anyone perfect? Doesn't exist. Don't tell anyone. So, now the question is, why did God create it like that? In other words, why did God create us not to be perfect? Is it just because God, you know, wanted? And is there a purpose in it? So we're going to get to that, that there is a purpose. A huge purpose. And that's why 99% of us can never become perfect. I hate to break it to you. When you become 99, you're still not going to be perfect. So let's read text 2.
God saw that the righteous are few in number, so he planted them in every generation, as it is written, the tzaddik is the foundation of the world, from Proverbs.
Okay, so righteous is, I call it type A, which is very minute amount of people that are tzaddiks. Then text 3 is the rest of us, which is 99.99.99% of the people, yeah?
The status of Benoni is attainable for all people. Achieving the status ought to be every person's goal. At any time, any person can be a Benoni, because the Benoni does not have an aversion for the unholy. To have an aversion for the unholy is not practical for all people, because that is a feeling that we cannot necessarily control, and not all times are alike. The Benoni's task is only to turn away from evil and do good, from Psalms. In actual practice, indeed, speech and thought, in these areas, the choice, ability, and freedom are given to every person to act, speak, and think in ways that are contrary to the desire of the heart and even diametrically opposed to it. To change one's feelings, on the other hand, namely to truly detest the unholy, absolutely, or even less than that, this is only possible when one has a great and intense love of God, the kind of ecstatic love and divine bliss that is similar to the pleasure experienced in the world to come. Of this experience, the sages said, you will experience your world to come in your lifetime, from the Talmud, but not every person merits this.
So basically, a tzaddik, which we call a type A person, never has the feeling of any negative feelings. Never feels jealous. Never gets angry. Never has lusts. Never has negative desires. Never has laziness. And also, whatever you can, on and on. Why? Because in this tzaddik person, the only soul that dominates is the godly. The animal soul is either dead or became godly. So there's never going to be a feeling, oh, I feel so sluggish, or I feel so depressed, or I feel so sad. Or it doesn't exist in a tzaddik. The only thing he has is his godly motive of his godly soul, selfless, godly, for the higher purpose, and that's the whole motivation of their life. From 24/7. Like all the tzaddikim, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Moshe, all the tzaddikim. Type B, which is us, we're going to have all the negative feelings. We're going to have the flawless in us forever. But what we could do is we could control our actions. Even though I feel anger towards you, I'm still going to behave like a mensch. Is my feeling going to go away? Not necessarily. I'm jealous of you, but I'm still going to treat you the right way. In other words, to say that our flawless is gone, we have that natural soul that's always causing it and is always there. We're still going to get to, but why did God make us like that? It's the how God made us. Why? Why does He want us to always have the flaws and not be complete, not like a tzaddik? We'll get to it in a moment. Before we get to that, we're just for one moment going to speak about frustration. Anyone ever get frustrated?
Sure.
You do get frustrated? Never? Never? Anyway, so I'll just want to go to page 52. You have page 52?
Yeah.
You ready?
Yes.
I'm going to go with you this exercise. I think it's very important. You tell me, from a scale to 1 to 3, do you get frustrated from it? Your car breaks down in the middle of the highway on 95, Under 95, yeah? Done 95, not at 95, but 95. And you need to get an Uber. Are you frustrated from that? Yes, yeah. Right? That will make you frustrated. You can't afford the car of your choice. Gets you, not so bad, right? Okay. You can't afford the luxury car of your choice. No. You can't afford a private jet.
No.
I mean, would you fly in a private jet that someone offered it to? Yeah.
Yes.
But if I can't afford it, I'm not frustrated that I don't have a private jet. It's not like, oh yeah, I can't sleep at night. You haven't yet got wings to fly, you know. I mean, I would love that I don't have to take my car to Manhattan. I just fly over the bridge and I don't pay tolls and I'm there. But we don't have that expectation, you know what I mean? Now let's go with housing. You're homeless. That's very frustrating. I have nowhere to sleep. I don't know where to go. That could be very, very frustrating. You can't afford an apartment or home that meets your needs. Can be frustrated, but as long as I have a place to sleep, you know. You can't afford to buy only to rent. That can be sometimes frustrated. You can't afford to buy a luxury home as you wish. No? Maybe. You can't afford to purchase Buckingham Palace, which is only 830,000 square feet, yeah? 830,000 square feet. I never knew it was 830,000, and I never had the desire to have it. Anyone ever had the desire? You get frustrated that you don't have a Buckingham Palace? I don't think anyone gets frustrated from that. Leisure things. You are, what is it? Oh, golfer. The local golf club shut down. Okay. It for me, I can't tell you because I never. I'm sure people that are golfing, it really frustrates them that they can't go golfing anymore. The only local golf club is not nice the way I like it. It's a little frustrated. You can't beat your, what is it?
Buddies.
Oh, buddies in golf. You can't shoot 5 under.
Under
par. Okay.
It's a very golf specific.
This is a golf statistic.
You didn't write this?
Not this one, no. But here's what I want to share, one thing. The point of it is very simple. You only get frustrated from not from things that happen to you, but things that you expect and you don't get to that expectation. That's what really frustrates you. The fact that I don't have a Buckingham Palace, okay, if someone gives it to me, I'm not going to say no, but I don't get frustrated I don't have it because it's not in my world. It's not my expectation to begin with. I don't have wings. Would I like wings? 100%. Am I frustrated about wings? No, because it's not even in my thought. I don't even get into the thought. Wings? Who has wings? The same thing is when a person is frustrated, there's only one reason. You think you're here and you get frustrated. Well, if I'm such a good person, why do I have these negative thoughts? Why am I always angry? Why do I always fail? My dear friends, lower your expectations. You have two souls in you. You have the godly and the animal, the natural. So you're always going to have that jealousy in you. You're always going to have the anger. You're always going to like food. I'm sorry. I know it breaks your heart that you like food. I know it breaks your diet that you like food, but that's how God created us. And our job is to control it. Eat, but not as too much. Do what you gotta do, but not overdo it. This is our job, and we'll soon see why. With this, we also understand one of the Ten Commandments, which is very hard to understand, which is the hardest to do, by the way, which is the hardest of the Ten Commandments. So usually people say, honoring your father and mother, especially if they annoy you, observing Shabbos, you know, it's hard. But the truth is, the hardest one is the last one. Loi sachmoid. Don't covet. Let me think what that means. Don't covet means it's not an action. It's just a feeling. That means God is saying to us in the Ten Commandments, don't even have that feeling. How could I expect from a human not to love that beautiful house of my friend? Or that beautiful Rebbetzin that the other person has? And the Torah gives us a command in the Ten Commandments, which is pretty heavy, because everything in the Ten Commandments is a capital criminal offense. So God is giving you a capital criminal offense for a feeling. So look what he says in text 4, a very important thing. Yeah?
Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, servant, or whatever belongs to your neighbor, from Exodus. Many people wonder about this commandment. How is a man not to covet in his heart that which is beautiful and that which he finds desirable? I will give you a parable to explain this. If a common villager of sane mind sees the king's daughter, he will not covet her although she is beautiful, because he knows that this is impossible. This villager will not think like a lunatic who desires to have wings to fly in the sky. This verse tells us that we need to understand that the wife of a neighbor, whom God has forbidden us, is more removed from us than is the princess from the villager. If we have this frame of mind, we will be happy with our lot, and it will not enter our mind to covet and desire something that is not ours.
So, again, if you don't even have it in your expectation list, you don't have a desire for it. You don't get frustrated. On the contrary, the reason you get frustrated and you have it is because we call your ego personality, that you think you're much better than who you are. And you're, how could I have such a desire to someone else's wife? Well, my dear friends, you know, it happens, but if you could get not out of this frustration, it won't even come to in your mind. Look in text 5.
To the contrary, despondency over your spiritual struggles stems from an inflated self-assessment, from not recognizing your place. This delusion leads you to feel badly that you are not on the level of the perfect person, who is certainly not bothered by such foolish thoughts. Know your place. You are very far from the level of the perfect person, and perfection ought not to be your goal. Rather, you should aspire to always be a Benoni, and never for a moment to fail in thought, speech, and action. And this, after all, is the lot of the Benoni and their task in life, to struggle against and subdue their negative impulses.
So don't expect to be a tzaddik, that you're never going to have negative flaws, but at least expect to control them. Now, why did God create such people, which is 99% of us? There's a famous story, and this is, I heard when I was a kid also, in Soviet Union, they used to put people in prison. And what do prisoners usually do? They used to work. And the government used to, you know, whether digging for gold, you know, different things that they did, build train tracks. And the problem was there were too many prisoners, and they didn't have enough jobs to give them. There were more people in prison than releasing. So what they used to do, they used to create this a mill, like a grinder, that you turn, and it's supposed to grind the wheat. So you're in this room, and you're turning this big wheel that, and on the other side, the wheat is grinding, and you're hopefully producing a few thousand pounds a day. So this guy, this Jewish guy, he's been doing it every day. He wakes up and he's turning and turning and turning. After like 10 years being in prison, they finally release him, and he says, so could I see what I produce? He says, no problem. They come, they take him to the other side of the wall, and he sees there's nothing there. The turning thing was just turning without anything happening on the other side. He fainted. He literally fainted. Why? Because when a person works hard and sees an outcome and sees the fruits, the hard labor becomes sweet. because you see there's something being productive from your hard work. But if there's no productivity of your hard work, you don't want to do it. I remember Talmud says this also. If you pay, let's say, someone $5 an hour for working hard, and you tell the guy, you know what, instead of working hard, I'll pay you $10 and just put your hands like this, just do this for 8 hours and take a lunch break, you know, the guy wouldn't take more money for it. He'd rather take the $5 and produce something that he could produce than just, and give me $20 for what? Like this? A person doesn't have a will to not see what comes out of his labor. So if we're born to be struggling and with faults, is there ever going to be a day that we're going to get out of this? Or is this, we're going to just be turning this wheel and wheel like this every day? A struggle, a struggle, a struggle. And if that's how we're going to be a whole lifetime, so what's the purpose? A whole lifetime having this struggle? So we're going to show you that yes, you're going to be struggling a whole life with your emotions, but there's a huge purpose with it. What's the purpose? And this is the difference between potato kugel, or make it easier, sweet Lakshin kugel, or spicy Jerusalem kugel. Which would you eat more? Sweet Lakshin kugel or spicy wealth spice Yerushalmi kugel? Which one could you absorb more? You'll take a little piece of the sweet kugel.
Mix it together.
But sweet has a limit. How much ice cream could you eat in one time? One container, two containers, that's it. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to something spiced well, you know, something that's itself, you're not going to eat pepper on it, you know, spiced pepper or spiced cinnamon on its own, but when you mix things together, all kinds of spices with all kinds of things, has a great enjoyment to it. The same thing God created, two delicacies. He loves the righteous Jews that made everything sweet, but he also gets a lot of pleasure from the spicy Jews. And you and me are the spicy Jews.
Definitely.
You know, some different kinds of spices in there. There's hundreds of different spices. And that gives God tremendous joy. Seeing the struggle, and you're controlling the struggle. Not converting the struggle, but controlling it. Look in text 6.
Do not feel distressed or exceedingly troubled, even if you are engaged in this conflict all your life. For perhaps this is the reason why you were created, and this is your calling, to constantly subdue the thoughts and feelings that emanate from unholiness. There are two kinds of enjoyment for God. One is from the complete annihilation of unholiness. This is accomplished by perfect people who transform their internal bitterness to sweetness and darkness to light. The second is from the subduing of unholiness, while it is at the apex of its strength through the effort of strugglers. This is alluded to in the verse, "Make me delicacies as I enjoy," Genesis. Although this verse, in its simple sense, describes Isaac's instruction to Esau, the Zohar explains that this conversation reflects a deeper reality, and these are words spoken by the divine presence to her children, the community of Israel. The word delicacies in plural form indicates the aforementioned two types of enjoyment. In physical food, there are two varieties of delicacies, pleasant and sweet foods, and savory or tart foods that have been well seasoned and prepared so that they have become delicacies that refresh the soul.
So there's two types of pleasure that God gets from humans. There's the pleasure he gets from these righteous few individuals, which took all their negative and made it a positive, and they only have good, sweet thoughts, good, sweet emotions, good, sweet feelings, good, sweet desires. God loves that. But then there's another delicacy, which is spiced pepper and all kinds of things, that the idea over here is you have an animal, you have a godly, there's a struggle, you know, you feel a little this, an anger, but you control your anger. You feel a lust, you control it. You feel this, you control it. That brings God also joy. Now, which one does God enjoy more? Which one does he have greater joy from? The sweet seven-layer cake or the spicy delicacy? So he says an interesting thing. What you enjoy more, let's say you have two children. One child always gets an A, 100. That's their nature. They're always easy to get. Then there's another child that also gets 100, but they have to work hard on it. You understand? It doesn't come easy to them. Which one gives you more nachas? Obviously. Obviously the second one. Why? Because it's something new. It's something he had to earn and gain and make something different than who he is. It's like when you have a human giving a beautiful speech, you know, a nice sermon, you enjoy it. But if I bring you a bird, and I get a bird to say to you, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, that's it could say. It's going to give you much more joy than the long sermon I gave you. Why? Because a bird to talk, it's not a normal thing. Birds don't normally talk. So if I get a bird to talk one sentence, it gives the enjoyment that you get from it is so much deeper and so much more exciting and so much special than the human being. That's that what humans do. Humans should talk. Okay, so thank God you talk well. The same thing is with a tzaddik versus a regular person. A tzaddik is like a human being that talks well. A person like us, which is not normal for us to do and daven like a mensch and do things like a mensch, and we do that, that's like the bird talking. Don't you get a more nachas from a bird talking? Let's finish and then I'll go to your question.
It's a silly question. It's not anything theoretical. But in the verse, it says, these are the words spoken by the divine presence to her children. Why the pronoun her? Who's the her?
All Jewish people are her. Because God is the masculine, and the entire Jewish nation is the feminine. The difference between, just for you to know always, the difference in Torah when it uses masculine or feminine, usually God is the masculine, but sometimes God is the feminine. Most of the times we're the feminine, sometimes we're the masculine. What's the difference? The one that's the provider and the giver is the masculine. The ones that's the receiver and the taker is the feminine. So usually who's the provider? God. Who's the receiver? Us. So we're the feminine. So usually, but sometimes God enjoys us, so he's the feminine, he's enjoying our action, and we're the... So here is God speaking to her, which is the Jewish people, and saying that I enjoy both delicacies. I enjoy the tzaddik, and I enjoy the strugglers. You get it?
Yes.
Okay, text 7. Let's read text 7.
The hearts of kings are unfathomable. Proverbs. This poses a difficulty. When one wishes to capture a king's attention with an impressive gift in order to then request something from him, after all, even valuable gifts are of no consequence to the king. However, when we bring him something surprisingly original, such as a talking bird, this is precisely the kind of gift that impresses the king. Granted, a bird's speech is infinitely inferior to human speech, for a person speaks with intelligence and wisdom, whereas a talking bird merely repeats the sound of words as it has been trained, without true comprehension. And even then, its enunciation is inferior to that of a human. Nevertheless, because it is a delightfully original phenomenon, it impresses the king favorably. A similar dynamic plays out before the king of the universe, whereby God's ultimate purpose for creation involves souls in this material world, not angels. It is true that angels have love and awe for God and a profound understanding of the divine, whereas the service performed by souls in this world cannot compare to the angel's service. Unlike the angels, our service requires tremendous effort and exertion, and after all that effort, our work still cannot compare to that of angels. Nevertheless, the angels' service offers nothing surprising, for they do not inhabit a world of unholiness. By contrast, the service performed by souls down here emerges from a background of unholiness, and even then, only after overcoming an evil inclination that entices and tempts a person. God views such service as a delightful novelty.
Got it? So angels, you know how many angels God has? Millions, billions, infinite angels. And the whole day, what are they doing? They're praising God. But God doesn't get excited. But us human beings, we go to work a whole day. And finally, right before we fall asleep, we say, "Oh God, Shema Yisrael!" That gives God more pleasure than the angels a whole day. It's something. Now, what's funny here is, till now I told you the two types of pleasure, the pleasure of the tzaddik and the pleasure of regular people like us. But there's one more thing I wanted to share with you. That every time you overcome one struggle, emotionally, you know, mentally, one time, you have a cosmic effect on the entire world, and not only on this world, on all the spiritual worlds, and you change the whole worlds from one little overcoming of a struggle, which means, give me an example. You have a crazy thought enters your mind, an immoral thought, whatever immoral thought, and as soon as you catch it, you push it out of your mind. You say, "I'm not thinking such crazy thoughts." You know, push it and get away. By you just pushed away that thought, you just subdued the entire evil of the world, that the evil became less evil, and you brought a whole new light to the world that didn't exist, and you changed the whole universe. One thought I pushed away. Now let's take your mouth. Anyone know how to zipper their mouth? Like this? You have a desire that you want to say one word to someone that's not so appropriate. Yeah, you say, "Yeah, this is sugar." Or, "He's crazy." But you hold yourself in. That holding in of that one word, not only, of course, it gives God pleasure, like we said till now, but you change the entire cosmic world, that you now subdued the evil strength, and you brought a positive energy that changed the whole world. So God not only enjoys it, but every struggle we have and we overcome it, you're changing the whole universe. He needs more of us strugglers and less tzaddikim. He only made a few tzaddikim each generation, but strugglers he made a lot. How many times we have an urge to say gossip about someone? How many times that urge comes and you say, "I'm not going to say it"? Or how many times you want to tell a customer you're crazy, or your patient that you have no patient? Well, you understand what I'm saying, but you hold yourself in like this, and it's like a war. Or you want to say something to your spouse. You know, this is a tasteless soup. I'm just saying, it's funny because a lot of times, I don't know if you have children, but children tell you the truth. You know, the spouse covers up. So the mother makes the soup and nebuch, it's horrible. And the kid says, "Ugh," you know. But what is a husband going to do? You know? So there was a young couple that looks like the husband didn't get any training before the marriage. So he tells the wife every day, "You know, your food is so tasteless compared to my mother's food. I mean, your food is a disaster." And every time, every day. So the wife was never a young lady, so she took the pain and she tried to perfect herself. And after a few months, finally one time, the husband says, you know, I want to tell you, this time, you got it right. It tastes just like my mother's.
It is.
He says, okay, good, I'm making you for dinner the same thing. You know, good. He's excited. He goes to work and he's working a whole day. Comes home and she's so excited that she made this whole thing. But Abyssal Seichel, she left it too long on the fire, it got burnt. So the food that he already wanted also had no taste. Anyways, so the point here is God is not upset that we're struggling. You know what I'm saying? On the contrary. That's not only the biggest joy, but you're changing the whole world. Look in text 8. This is the most important text of our life.
Because you lot of strugglers and their task in life is to subdue the negative impulses, the thoughts that these impulses spawn, to completely divert their minds from such thoughts and utterly reject them, as has been explained earlier. Every time strugglers expel a negative thought from the mind, the force of unholiness below is suppressed, because a stimulus from below causes a stimulus from above. The cosmic forces of unholiness are also suppressed. The Zohar marvels at the tremendous pleasure that God derives from the suppression of unholiness below. This causes God's glory to rise above all, an unparalleled ascent, a feat not accomplishable through any other praise.
So what is he telling us here? Every time, you have a cosmic effect, wow, the whole world has changed. So now the question is, so I just learned that if I have struggles in myself and I control it, it's the greatest joy for God and it changes the whole universe. So now the question is, God, can you give me some more struggle? In other words, like this. People usually come to you and say, enough, you know, I'm frustrated about these struggling, I'm always angry and always this, and I'm trying always to be on diets and I always have a desire. Is there going to be a day I'm not going to like ice cream? You know what I'm trying to say? I say, yeah, when you're not alive. But God wants you to like ice cream. I'm sorry. Is there going to be a day I'm not going to like money? No. When you're not alive. When you're alive, you're going to love money. Is there going to be a day that I have a hard time respecting my parents? Never. You're always going to have a hard time. We're not tzaddikim. But every time I control myself and I say, you know what? I love money, but I'm going to act honest. I love ice cream, but I'm only going to eat 3 teaspoons. You just now subdued the entire cosmics of evil. You busted the evil flare of ego and you brought down a new energy and you gave God the greatest joy. That's your purpose. The end of your 120 years, you're still going to have an animal soul with you. But your whole struggle and overcoming every little struggle, that is the purpose why you're here. So you're never going to lose that momentum to want to live more with the struggle, because the struggle is what's life all about. That's what makes the whole world good, is that we could overcome each struggle and temptation and desire, and through that change the whole world and give God the biggest pleasure. That is what it's all about. It's funny. When God wanted to give the Torah to the Jewish people, who objected? Who objected and told God, you can't? Or the angels. They say to God, why give it to flawless people? People that have jealousy, people that have anger, people that hate each other, people that can't. So God says to Moshe, Moshe, could you answer to the angels? So Moshe says, you want me to answer? I thought you... look what Moshe answers to the angels. Why God gave us the Torah, not to the angels. The angels didn't want to let God give the Torah to us flawless people. So in text 9a and 9b, look what Moshe says.
When Moses ascended on high to receive the Torah, the ministering angel spoke before God, Master of the universe, what business does a mortal being have among us? He has come to receive the Torah, God answered. The angel said to God, the hidden treasure that has been hidden with you, you wish to give to flesh and blood? What is man that you should consider him? From Psalms, O God, our Master, how exalted is your name throughout the earth. Your glory should remain upon the heavens. Answer them, God said to Moses.
Look what it says in 9b. Look at the answer he gave them. Short answer.
Moses said, Master of the universe, what is written in the Torah that you wish to give to me? You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. Turning to the angels, Moses said, is there jealousy among you? Is the evil inclination among you? The angels immediately conceded.
Got it. So what is he saying? So basically, you know, when you go to psychiatrists or therapists, what do they say? They usually say to you, listen, you're struggling now, but I want you to work through the struggle, and eventually you won't have that struggle anymore. Because the struggle is a means to another level, another goal. The Torah says no. The struggle itself is the goal. It's not like, you know, every day I have to wake up and again I have the desire and again I have the temptation. When, and am I going to get older? Am I going to become mature? No, the struggle itself is the whole purpose of your life. When I say struggling, I don't mean here struggle in the sense of, you know, I don't have a job. I'm thinking of struggling mentally, emotionally, you know, like jealousy, anger, you know, all the character struggles, you know, our character kind of struggles, you know. I usually use anger because the Rambam uses it a lot, that most people have an angry burst or, you know, lust, desires, food, all kinds of struggling in the emotional world. Struggling in health and all that, that's something else. But struggling between the godly soul and the animal soul. In the constant fight within yourself. How do I treat others? How do I say, this guy said this to me. This guy said, I'm going to hit. I remember I once had a person got into a fight with someone in the community. So I said to them, I want to tell you something. You're right of what you said to the person. You know, during the fight, you're right. But I don't want you to be right. I want there to be peace. So she said, what do I do? I said, very simple. Tell the person that hurt you, say, go with them, say, I'm very sorry that I caused you to hurt me. He says, what do you mean? I should go. I said, yeah, please go to the person and say, I'm very sorry that I caused you to hurt me. He says, it's not true. I said, I don't care if it's not true. Our goal is not what's right or wrong. Our goal is to have peace here. The same thing is with our struggle, with our animal soul. The goal is not to get rid of the animal soul, because you're never going to get rid of it. But our goal is, let's work with it and say, okay, you want the ice cream? 2 teaspoons, 3 teaspoons, that's it. You want to say gossip? You could say it in my mind, but I'm not going to say it in my mouth. You want to feel laziness? You know, like sluggish? You could feel it, but I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to do what's right. You know, it was my feeling of my animal self-centeredness, which we discussed a lot last week, is not going to hold me back of what my godly soul wants me to really do. And that's the struggle we're having the whole day. And every time we overcome one struggle, besides giving God the ultimate pleasure, like this bird that's speaking, you're changing the entire cosmos of this world, that it's being diminishing the negative, and you're bringing a lot of positive. That is our goal. So our goal, we're always going to love potato kugel, we're always going to love ice cream, we're always going to love eating, we're always going to be jealous, we're always going to have anger, but we can work on ourselves, not as much anger, not as much jealousy, but to say no jealousy at all, no anger at all, No loss at all. We're not angels. That's Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rebbe, Tzaddikim. Yes. But don't put yourself on that level and then be frustrated and then be anxiety and then be depressed that you're not there. You're not ever supposed to be there. The Buckingham Palace was not meant to be mine. I don't even think about the Buckingham Palace. It's not in my world. You understand the concept a little?
No.
Clear? Or it's a little confusing? Okay. Let's go to text 10. A very interesting, we'll end off with this funny challenge. You know, one of the things we don't eat in Judaism is meat of pork. Why don't we eat pork? The Torah says because the animal of a pork has split hoofs. The hand has split off, but it doesn't chew its cud. It doesn't re-chew its food. I went this summer, I was looking at a pig. I wanted to see where the split hoofs is, because I wanted to see what the Torah says. And I saw it's not the same as a kosher split hoof. You ever saw like a cattle, and you see it's totally split, you know? By the pig, it's there, but it's not like a hoof like the other ones. Anyway, so now the question I ask you, what should a person say? Should a person say, ugh, I hate pork. It's disgusting. Or a person should say, listen, you know what, I really love pork, but God told me not to. You know, it's where do I get the bigger accomplishment? That I get myself to hate pork? Or no, I love pork, but I'm not going to eat it because God told me.
How do you know you love it?
It's a good question.
You can't love it because you know it's not good for you. It's not a healthy product.
Okay, let's get a different example.
We get the idea of what you're saying, that the pleasure arrives because you already acknowledge giving up.
Exactly.
You're working against your inclination.
That's what he says. Text 10. Say, excellent. Go.
Do not say, I cannot tolerate wearing a garment made of shatnez, a biblically forbidden mixture of wool and linen. I find the meat of the swine repulsive. I have no desire for illicit sexual relations. Instead, say, I can and would. What shall I do, however? My Father in heaven has instructed me not to.
Got it? So the point is that the fact that I could and I would, but the reason I'm not is because it's not the right thing, that's the challenge here. That's the accomplishment. The accomplishment is not that, oh, it's disgusting. That maybe it is disgusting. But the accomplishment is that even if I could and I want to, I'm still not going to because it's not what God wants. That's who we are. We are the ones that want it. And it, meaning, you know, any negative thing we want, but we're not going to do it because God doesn't want us. So now we're accomplishing something. I want to end off just with one thing. Sometimes, by living a life like this, meaning always struggling and overcoming it, the more you overcome it, eventually, you're not going to have this struggle on that level anymore. So I'll give you an example. Let's start with a diet. Before you were on a diet, you ate everything you saw. Right? Anything that you saw that tasted good, you put into your mouth. You went on to a diet, and now you're only eating gluten-free, no sugar, and no this and no that, no cholesterol, everything. Very extreme. But it comes to a certain point if you stay on the diet and you don't leave go, that all of a sudden, the desire and the craving to that pizza or to ice cream is not there as it was before. But you'll have a desire for vegetable and watermelon. I'm just giving an example. So now your struggle is not going to be about pizza and ice cream, but it's going to be about watermelon and how many watermelons should I eat? You know what I mean? Should I eat two watermelons or one watermelon? You getting what I'm trying to say? In other words, you are achieving a lot by overcoming the struggle, but the struggle then becomes more elevated to a more fine and refined level. So it's no more with the low coarse negative, it could be in the positive itself going higher and higher. So, you know, it's such a struggle for me to come to shul in the morning. Let's say, I'm just giving an example. But after you do it after a while, it's no more a struggle. But now the struggle is, can I daven with intention fully, you know, those 10 minutes that I'm there? Or is it just reading the words and flopping away? So now the struggle is in that. And I'm already in shul. Can I control that I don't speak to anyone in shul till I finish praying? Or do I have to talk during the whole prayer? You get what I'm saying? So now my struggle is not, do I come to shul? My struggle is I'm already in shul, but what am I doing and how am I behaving? And that's how it keeps going higher and higher. So the religious Jews struggle, they struggle more in themselves, constantly. Because even in right itself, it should be motivated, like we spoke about a lot last week, for the right reason. So I'm giving charity. But what motivates me to give charity? For self reason or for selfless reason? I'm davening, but why am I davening? For selfish or selfless? So the reason I'm saying this to you is, when I say to you, you're never going to not have a struggle, I don't mean that you're going to stay in the same struggle. But you're always going to have a struggle. And as you keep chopping and chopping and chopping, the struggle becomes on a higher plane, on a higher level. So it's like when you're in first grade, the 100 is 100 of first grade, but when you're in second grade, your 100 is going to be of second grade, not of a first grade 100. Yeah, Lovie? You're not, yeah. So W says you could always have expectations to be better, but don't ever expect to be perfect. That's a good way. So let's do the last piece and we'll conclude for tonight. Page, text 11, page 66.
When we subdue unholiness below, we cause a great revelation of God's glory and holiness in the higher worlds. From this holiness issues a sublime holiness on us below to assist and empower us in our service of God. This is what the sages had in mind when they said, when we sanctify ourselves a little below, we are sanctified much more from above, in the Talmud. In truth, we are not holy, nor are we removed from the unholiness that is at its full strength in our hearts. Yet if we subdue our unholiness and act in a holy manner, ultimately, we will be truly holy and separated from all unholiness. This is due to the holiness we receive from above, which helps us to gradually expel the unholiness from our hearts.
We're going to just read the key points and conclude up. You have the cards? Okay, key points on page 67.
Perfect people do exist. Endowed with lofty souls, such people are extremely rare. They are holy, selfless, flawless, and have vanquished their negative impulses and character flaws. The majority of people, however, struggle their entire lives against their character flaws and unhealthy impulses. For most, inner perfection is unattainable. Two, it is typical to feel frustrated by our internal struggles. This frustration is a result of unreasonable expectation of perfection. We need to come to terms with who we are and always will be and understand that struggling is our mission in life. Three, common wisdom attributes value to struggle because it is part of a process that leads to a beneficial result. From the Jewish perspective, the struggle is the goal. Four, when we struggle against and suppress our internal unholy instincts, we create a cosmic impact. We trigger the suppression of the cosmic forces of unholiness, unleashing a tremendous amount of divine light. Five, God enjoys the sweet and pleasant service of the perfect person, but God enjoys as much, if not more, the savory, spicy service of the struggler. In fact, God derives exquisite nachas from the extraordinary work of the struggler. Our flaws are not impediments, they are gifts and make us valuable and cosmically relevant. 6, this perspective also resolves feelings of shame and inadequacy, which result from seeing character flaws as liabilities instead of gifts. 7, adopting this perspective requires divine soul focus and mission-focused living and thinking.
I'll just end off with an interesting story. Chassidus speaks about knowing who you really are, not to fool yourself and think you're better than you are. So a lot of times there was a person that said, when I daven, I am totally concentrated in the davening, that no, I don't hear what's going around me. Like, I'm totally into it. So the Chassidus wanted to show that he's not such a tzaddik. So one guy took like a needle, and during this person's prayer, he stuck a needle into his hand to see if he's really concentrating. And the guy didn't make a move, he's still davening, nothing, as if nothing happened. So he took the needle, stuck it even deeper in. And the guy still, it's like, wow. The guy's like not moving. Finally, the third time, he banged it all the way in. This time the guy said, ouch, you know. So they said to him, I thought when you pray, you don't know what's going on. You're such a righteous, holy, angelic individual. How did you feel it? He says, well, I'll tell you the truth. I am very holy. I'm very angelic. I'm very special. But this is already your third time you're pushing it into me. After the third time, I feel it already. You understand?
Yes.
And the reason it's very important, I think, is we always were taught in school that the biggest thing is when you fool yourself of thinking of something you're not. Don't fool yourself. You like ice cream. You like, you know, you're a regular flawless person. You have flaws, full of negative. That's who we are. But don't stop. That's what life is all about. But the end of the day, we struggle a whole day. But before you go to sleep, the last patch, you should win. In other words, you should give the animal soul a little zest and say, Zeigesend, where's there a good test for that? There are a lot of times before you go to sleep, people like to eat something. You know, face a little, what is it called? A dessert or, you know? So you say to yourself, you know, once a week, I'm not going to eat that nacho before I go to sleep. You know how hard it is? But I'm going to show the animal that I'm in charge. I'll give him a patch, you know? So before you end the day, who gives the patch to who? Anyways, I just want to conclude with another thing.